presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
It would be unusual for me to ever tell my audience, video, podcast, radio, everything in between, that they should do something other than give their full attention to the show. After all, I like to think that folks enjoy our conversation, and I like to have this vision in my mind of everybody being really plugged in to every word we discuss around here, all the UGA football news and UGA athletics news that we kind of distribute over the course of the show. You'd like to think that you have a captive audience for that, but today I would suggest it's okay to be not maybe quite as captive. If you're watching the show on video, maybe you have another browser up on your device. If you're listening to this on the radio, maybe you pull out your phone for kind of a second screen experience. Podcast, kind of everything else, too, very much the same way. Because as I'm speaking right now live, just after 10 a.m. on this Tuesday morning, if you go to DogNation.com right now, and I think you should go to DogNation.com right now, you will see a link right up there at the very top of the page to find out more information about our Dog Nation Days of Summer. Now, I told you yesterday about why I think this is going to be the most fun summer we've had around Dog Nation, and I also told you yesterday that today would be the day you could start booking your room. So right now, if you go to DogNation.com, you can get in on that. Your chance to be with us on June the 13th, which is really going to be here before you know it, at Callaway Resort and Gardens, and then with us again on August the 1st at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. Now, the reason why you want to act fast on this, as I explained yesterday, the first 20 rooms booked at Callaway for June 13th and at Brasstown for August 1st, those first 20 rooms booked are going to make you eligible for a very special VIP experience. We're going to have a regular event at both these places that starts at 6 p.m. A lot of Georgia football talk, a lot of the stuff we've done in Atlanta we'll be doing outside the city of Atlanta at both Callaway Resort and Gardens and Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. We'll be doing that there starting at 6 p.m., but a special VIP experience and a whole lot of good stuff going along with that VIP opportunity for the first 20 rooms booked at both locations. So please go to DogNation.com. You can find out more about these great facilities. You can find out more about this awesome, awesome event, and you can start booking your room right now. Because after all, who doesn't need a great excuse for a summer getaway? And Dog Nation's giving you that with our Dog Nation Days of Summer. Really excited about seeing all of you at these great events this summer. Now, with that said, speaking of travel, Georgia's got some more travel planned coming up in the years ahead, and I think this is really fun. Georgia announcing a home-and-home series with the Oklahoma Sooners. And really, I think that, and I know there's going to be some pushback from Georgia fans of, well, another example, at least in the return date for Georgia getting the home game back against Oklahoma, that's not scheduled to happen until a long time in the future, and I get that. And there's a little bit of pushback about the fact that almost all of these homes and home that Georgia has scheduled with these Power 5 opponents, they almost all include a road trip for Georgia first and then a return home date after that. In the case of the Georgia-Oklahoma return date, as I said, it's many years in the future. I get that there's some pushback on all of that. And yet, even with that said, I think that the addition of the Oklahoma series to go along with everything else that Georgia has added here recently, I think this is something that's really fun for fans, and I think this is something that UGA fans ought to celebrate. First of all, the number one reason why is because when we first started talking about Georgia versus Texas or Georgia versus Clemson or Georgia versus Florida State, all of these upgraded schedules and tougher non-conference opponents, all of that started to seem and feel very distant in the future, kind of a long time from now. Well, all of a sudden, you blink your eyes, and some of this stuff kind of doesn't quite seem so far away anymore. In fact, with the addition of Oklahoma, you start to see a little bit of a connection between the non-conference schedules in future years, where all of a sudden, you can just about guarantee yourself every year going forward that Georgia's going to have a non-conference Power 5 opponent other than Georgia Tech on its schedule. In fact, if you're watching on video, I'll show you some of the evidence on this. Next season, Georgia plays Virginia and Atlanta. May not seem like a great game, but it's better than McNeese State or something like that. In 2021, there's not one of those kinds of games. But then watch this. Then in 2022, it's Oregon and Atlanta. That could be a very fun game. 2023, the one that Georgia just added at Oklahoma. Then 2024, it's Clemson in Atlanta. 2025, Georgia back in Pasadena to take on UCLA. The following season, 2026, UCLA comes to Athens. Then it's at Florida Florida State in 2027, both Texas and Florida State in 2028, both Clemson and Texas in 2029. Then it's Clemson again at 2030, Oklahoma coming to Athens in 2031. It's a Clemson game again in 2032. And then the Dogs are back at Death Valley to take on Clemson again in 2033. That's essentially every year but one, 2021 and future years, as far as we can kind of think and see into the future, where Georgia is, assuming the scheduling model stays consistent with what it is right now, taking on another Power 5 non-conference opponent other than Georgia Tech. It's a massive scheduling upgrade, and by adding Oklahoma into that 2023 year, all of a sudden, as I said before, this is not some distant future thing. This is something that starts to feel like right now, beginning next year in Atlanta against Virginia, however good or not the Wahoos end up being. But this is kind of a little more present tense now than it seemed before just by adding Oklahoma. I think that's a really good thing. The other thing about this rivalry that I think, or I should say this series between Georgia and Oklahoma, that I think is going to be really fun for fans in particular, is the fact that it does, I think, have the potential of feeling a bit like a rivalry by the time 2031 or 2023 rolls around. And that's assuming, of course, that Kirby Smart stays at Georgia and Lincoln Riley stays at Oklahoma. I mean, right now, Georgia and Oklahoma don't necessarily feel that way, and maybe some people don't necessarily put Kirby Smart and Lincoln Riley in the same sentence when it comes to contemporaries. Some people think that Smart's rival is probably more like Nick Saban, the coach that he used to work for and the coach that he's obviously emulated a lot of from a style standpoint from what he learned at Alabama, bringing that over to Georgia, or kind of a Deep South next door neighbor like Dabo Swinney. But the truth is, both those coaches had been coaches for a long time before Kirby Smart became a head coach. And in the case of Nick Saban, he is, as I've said before, you know, more in the winter of his career. There's a very good chance in the next few years Saban's not coaching at Alabama at all anymore. But the coach that kind of probably feels a little bit more like Kirby Smart may be someone like Lincoln Riley, also a coach relatively new into his career and almost like the opposite side of the same coin. Kirby Smart has made his bones as a coach by being innovative with defense and being committed to a tough, hard-nosed brand of football. Lincoln Riley, on the other hand, has made his bones as a coach by being the flashiest offensive coach, arguably, in college football. And, you know, these two coaches who've kind of grown up at the same time, it was the head-to-head meeting at the Rose Bowl at the end of the 2017 season, and then Oklahoma getting into the playoff over Georgia last season, that have kind of put Lincoln Riley and Kirby Smart in the same discussion, maybe more so than some people realize. That these two, you know, relatively similar coaches in terms of the trajectory of their career, by the time 2023 rolls around, we could add a few more chapters into the lore of which of these two guys is the better coach and who's doing the better job of using his style of play as the style of play that could be dominating college football in that given year. And in fact, anytime you think about, you know, big-time Big 12-style offensive coach versus power football, defensive-minded SEC coach, there's always going to be a little extra pizzazz added to that rivalry because the two styles of football are so different. The two brands of football are so different. It was not too long ago, a year ago or so, that Lincoln Riley kind of talked about that. You know, talked about the way that his offense and the Big 12 offensive work, and that they're going to have an opportunity to score a whole bunch of points, even against some of these SEC defenses like Kirby Smart. Made some Georgia fans mad at the time, but it does add to a little bit of what might actually end up being a Lincoln Riley Kirby Smart coaching rivalry. Here's what Riley said last year.
You know, what's different here is you're facing those offenses every single week. You just don't have that in any other league. Not that you don't have good offense in other leagues. Of course you do, but you just don't have the consistency and just the challenge week in and week out that you do in this league. I mean, the Rose Bowl is a perfect example. Nobody all year could move the ball on Georgia, and you know, we had a pretty nice run in that game offensively. And you've seen that in a lot of the, you know, a lot of people had trouble moving the ball against Ohio State last year. You know, I mean, you've seen that a lot in these non-conference games, these matchups where all of a sudden these really good defenses are giving up, that everybody thinks for this or that, are giving up a lot of points to Big 12 teams. So it is a challenge. We did have some excellent defenses in this league last year. You know, Iowa State, TCU, some of those guys were some of the top-ranked defenses, no doubt. But you go throw Georgia's defense, which was a top-five-ranked defense going into the Rose Bowl, you go throw them in the Big 12 every year, they're not going to be a top-five defense. I mean, it's just probably not going to happen. And so you know, the challenges that you face, the style of offenses that you face is definitely a little bit different. But again, I think it's league-wise, again, if you watch kind of where the NFL's headed and kind of where our league's been, I think it's very, very close, very similar to so many of those teams. And I think there's a lot of teams in this league that are on the rise, too. So it's an exciting time for our conference.
I mean, it's really the age-old debate of how would an SEC defense do against Big 12 offenses every single week? How would a Big 12 offense do against SEC defenses each and every week? And when Georgia and Oklahoma play like they did in the Rose Bowl, that's going to come up. And in 2023 and then in 2031, that kind of stuff, the contrast and the styles of play is going to come up as well. And then one more quick final point on this. The third reason why I think Georgia-Oklahoma is really fun for fans is it's another example of what I believe Kirby Smart and Georgia doing, leading the way, ushering in this brand new era of scheduling in college football. There's no doubt that Georgia's been the most aggressive of any of the major Power 5 opponents about scheduling better games in the upcoming years to go along with what is already a tough SEC schedule and a permanent non-conference opponent like Georgia Tech. Georgia still wants more on top of that. Georgia fans ought to take a sense of pride in knowing it's the dogs leading the way on this. And Kirby Smart also talked about that as recently as a couple of weeks ago.
I'm thinking that to get in the playoffs, as the future goes, I don't know whether they'll ever expand it. That's not for me to even kind of divulge on. But I do think that you're going to need a quality of schedule to do that. I think that there's going to be two lost teams in the future if they've got a really tough schedule that'll be able to make that. I also think at the University of Georgia, you should be able to recruit the finest, best players in the country out of your own state and across the country because our academic institution is so highly thought of. So I want to have the best players. I want to play the best teams. Kids come to college to play big games. They don't come to play, I would never name anybody, but they don't come to play anybody, the Sisters of the Poor. They want to play the best teams. So we want to go schedule the best teams. Unfortunately, you can't schedule these games but 7 to 10 years out. And that's so frustrating to me because I can't think about 7 to 10 years out. I'm trying to think about tomorrow and this year, and you're having to schedule way in advance. But we thought three Power 5 opponents, non-conference, would be not groundbreaking, but we thought it would be a new thing, and we're not afraid of that. I'm not afraid to go out and play. I mean, you look at the NFL teams, and I know those are different players, but they play 16 teams in a season that are all good. There's no cupcake in the NFL. They play back-to-back-to-back quality opponents, and we want our fan base to get that. We also want our fan base to get potentially what might be 7 consecutive home games non-conference Power 5 opponent, and we're trying to get that lined up for them and play some good rivalries. I think it's going to help us in recruiting. I always do, and I like playing in Atlanta as well.
So listen, the overall bottom line for me is you hear Kirby Smart lament the frustration of 7 to 10 years you have to wait on these games, and initially that was kind of true. It's not quite 7 to 10 years anymore. 2023 is going to be here before you know it. Upgraded Georgia schedules are essentially here now, and it's a great chance for Georgia and its style of play to go out there and measure itself against the very best in the country. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. As I said off the top of the program, don't forget you can go to DogNation.com right now and start registering to join us for Dog Nation Days of Summer in June. On June the 13th at Callaway Resort and Gardens, on August the 1st at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, DogNation.com, the place to go to find out more about that right now. We'll get Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a moment. It's a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update Tuesday for us on our program. A lot of recruiting news we'll get from Mr. Sintel. Before we get to that, though, I did want to talk a little more football because on yesterday's program, I talked about a surprising potential first-round pick for Georgia in 2020. It was Georgia safety Richard LeCount, and over the course of our conversation, I explained why maybe when you look a little more deeply at LeCount, he's actually played a little better than maybe some Georgia fans may have given him credit for this most recent season. Well, another day and another potential surprising name mentioned as a possible first-round pick. Not surprising because he hasn't been a good player. He's been a very good player for a Georgia last season, but maybe just a level of attention we haven't seen this young man get as of yet. I'm talking about wide receiver J.J. Holloman. Now, Holloman was not mentioned in Sports Illustrated's most recent 2020 mock draft, but he did get some consideration as a possible first-round pick. Let me show you what the writer Eric Single says about Holloman as a potential guy who could leave as a junior and enter the first round of next year's draft. He says there's more speculation behind this one than the others, meaning he's less sure Holloman can truly become a first-round pick, but Single writes, Holloman is crazy athletic and could be a fast riser as Fromm looks for trusted targets after losing his top three receivers from 2018. Now, when it comes to Holloman's athleticism, when I think of that, I think of his leaping ability. I think of his ability to go and get the ball out of the sky. He's great at high-pointing those balls. But it's really that trusted target phrase that may mean the most here. That speaks to the kind of guy that you can depend on week after week after week. And that's one of the things that Kirby Smart talked about with Holloman after G-Day, a game admittedly that probably wasn't Holloman's best. It seems like at times Eric Stokes may have gotten the best of their one-on-one matchup, and yet it's a part of another spring for Holloman where he added to that trusted target status. In fact, there was one word that Smart used a lot to describe Holloman. Could it make him a first-round pick? Well, listen to Kirby and decide for yourself.
JJ's had a very consistent spring. He's physical, competitive. He runs the stop routes real well. He's made a couple really good plays on the deep ball and some other practices. Today, you know, he had a little slow start there getting started with the offense, but he's a model of consistency. He's got really strong hands and does some nice things.
Yeah, so listen, I think that's great to see. And as we said yesterday about Richard LeCount and J.J. Holloman, a lot of these 2017 signees starting to get some draft attention. Some of them may truly build on that and actually work their way into the first round of next year's draft. And so a lot of them are going to have their opportunity to do that. It'll certainly make the 2019 season a whole lot of fun to watch. And no doubt J.J. Holloman is a big part of that Georgia offensive plans. Before we talk to Jeff Sintel, let me also remind you that this week some great opportunities to save at Kroger. You can get two times the fuel points on Thursday through Sunday on select items when you download the coupon from the Kroger app. It's perfect timing for many of you who are traveling to see your mom this weekend for Mother's Day, or you got Memorial Day plans or something like that. Two times the fuel points Thursday through Sunday. That runs through May 26th, so make sure you take advantage of that at your local Kroger. It's good to have you here on Dog Nation Daily. We got a lot of fun stuff coming up on our program today. We will talk later on about another big get for the Georgia basketball program, Tom Crean, with a major recruiting win there. But here on this Tuesday, always a great chance to talk some football recruiting. We'll do that with Jeff Sintel right now. It's great to have you on the program.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Credit to Connor Riley. Y'all can't see this. Connor's our producer here, and he's running to do the phone. He's kind of doing the one-man band thing on the other side of the glass today. So he's doing the phone. He's playing the music. He's keeping the video going. That is a lot of juggling for one thing at one time, and I appreciate him helping keep us on the air on Dog Nation Daily today for our video, radio, and podcast audience. I also appreciate our next guest. He is, of course, our recruiting insider around here, and he gives you the inside scoop on UGA recruiting each and every week. His twist on things, I like to say. But when you want chef-inspired food with a twist, that's Marlowe's Tavern. Y'all know we love that around here, and we love them providing the Marlowe's Insider update to us on Dog Nation Daily each and every Tuesday, which means Jeff Sintel. Jeff, thanks for your time. We appreciate you being with us, and we hope you're doing well.
Hey, Brandon. I'm great. Hope everybody in the nation and on Twitter and on YouTube and on Facebook are having themselves a splendid morning so far.
So let's talk about Jay Hardy for a moment, Jeff. I liked your piece on him at DogNation.com yesterday. I think Hardy is now more important for UGA for reasons that we will get into in a moment. But the thing that I really liked about your angle on Hardy yesterday was the obvious chance that Georgia may have an ally in that recruitment. Now, I appreciate the fact that you pointed out that, listen, these high school teammates playing together in college or 7-on-7 teammates or guys who just become good friends at these camps, these package deals, so to speak, have a way of fizzling over time when you're old and gray like me. That's just something that you notice on the recruiting trail. And yet, you cite some evidence that suggests that Zion Logue, who played the same school that Jay Hardy goes to, the 2019 signee for Georgia, that he and Hardy have maybe a little deeper connection than that. How beneficial to Georgia is Logue going to be in Jay Hardy's recruitment?
Well, they're actually AAU teammates that go to different schools in Tennessee, but they grew up basketball players, which I think is very funny for the athlete that Georgia is now recruiting for its defensive line. You know, Jay Hardy was a guy that played first base growing up, and then he's hit 7 3-pointers in an AAU game, and he's hit 4 3-pointers in a varsity game. And yet this young man is 6'5" and about 275 and is rated among the nation's top 5 defensive ends. So Zion and him have a kinship, and they've been friends for a long while. And Zion's going to Georgia, and when Jay Hardy visits Georgia, Zion will be a natural host. He'll be able to kind of bond and click and everything else with him. And that's already a leg up on a recruiting process when Georgia already has a host, so to speak, that knows the young man well and knows where he came from and knows what he likes. And he can kind of give him the real when it comes to how the playing fit would be there at Georgia. You know, the other thing is that all sounds really well and good in textbook and all. But then I just watched them at a camp over the weekend, and those two were side by side. They were looking at each other's phones. They were laughing. They were pointing out the same things. The same cliques of guys would come up and talk to them, and they just seemed like easy, lifelong friends. And I think in the long run, I think this could help Georgia more than most.
Yeah, I think the other thing about Hardy that I think is really interesting, this is something you and I talk about a lot. You mentioned that weight, you know, already 270 pounds as a rising senior. I think about a guy that in a college program is going to add even more weight than that. And so it seems like to me, like a lot of these guys kind of listed by the recruiting services, sort of that strong side defensive end, that big defensive end. But I think of those guys kind of transitioning to more of a inside player, at least on a lot of downs for Georgia in the future, almost like what Brian Brzee could have been had he chosen UGA over Clemson. Am I on the right track with the player comp there for Hardy, that this is one of those guys? Kirby says he's looking for athletic defensive tackles, a big defensive end in high school, kind of grows into an athletic defensive tackle at the SEC level. Is that kind of the way that you see Hardy as a player?
Yeah, Brandon, I've got a metric. The young man better be special, like Brian Brzee special. When you're over 270 pounds in high school, and you're playing defensive end or playing out on the edge or the perimeter, your body's only going to get bigger. You're only going to get bigger. The good weight's only going to come onto you. That's going to be about 20, 25 pounds in college. And if you're 270, you'll end up 290, 300 in college. And it's almost like at any level of football. You know, great tight ends become tackles. Great offensive tackles become offensive guards. Great defensive ends become defensive tackles. You got to be really special to operate out of there on those edges. And, you know, Brzee is maybe the lone exception to that rule we've all seen lately after he just smoked a 4.13 short shuttle at the opening up there in D.C. And, folks, that's wide receiver fast in that pro agility drill.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I do think it's relatively interesting. You know, you talk about the Bill Nortons and the Zion Logues, the Tymon Mitchells from last year's class, the potential of a guy like Jay Hardy in this year's class. It's kind of interesting that Georgia has made these inroads in Tennessee. Jeff, as you know, the overall talent level in that state seems to be improving. Now, I don't know that it's improving dramatically, and I think there's still some work to be done to put that state on par with some of the other southern states as far as really producing top-flight college talent. But it's interesting that Georgia's success in recruiting the state of Tennessee would certainly seem to coincide with an era in which Tennessee's producing more of those four-star level SEC caliber players than certainly I think the state produced a few years ago.
Yeah, it's funny, Brandon. It seems like right now, whether it's Trey Scott or the Georgia way, but kind of like Idaho is known for its potatoes and Florida is known for its oranges, it seems like Tennessee right now, in terms of Georgia's eyes, is known for its defensive linemen. The Bulldogs are recruiting heavily in that area, and they're doing very well, probably because Tennessee is a little amiss right now. But there's a lot of things with Hardy that just stick out to me as a kind of a pure athlete. And that's really what you want. I noted the basketball stuff, but he's also comes from a very prestigious school in Tennessee, the McCauley School. That's an all-boys school where he's very focused on football. And this is a young man. I think Georgia's going to kind of hang around through a lot of cutdowns with him when it comes to his final decisions.
It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with Jeff Sintel. He gives us the inside scoop on UGA recruiting each week. But if you want inside information about the tavern right there in your neighborhood, including big events or special offers, maybe the next time Dog Nation's going to be on hand, become a Marlowe's Insider by texting the word Marlowe's, M-A-R-L-O-W-S. That's M-A-R-L-O-W-S to 24242. You can find out about all the things happening at the tavern right there in your neighborhood. All right, Jeff. The reason why the Jay Hardy recruitment may be more important for Georgia and players like Hardy, which we'll get to momentarily, is because of another piece of bad news and another sense of finality with a recruit that at one point in time we talked about a lot. So Miles Murphy comes out and announces that he's getting ready to make his decision, and on his Twitter feed he includes Clemson, he includes Auburn, doesn't say anything about Georgia whatsoever. So you have an in-state prospect from Powder Springs, and I get the whole position fit thing, and we've been down that road a million times, but it is a little bit of a kick in the gut for a lot of UGA fans that for a player of Murphy's caliber in a state like Georgia, area in Powder Springs, which the Dogs historically have, at least recently, have done pretty well, not to make the final two for Murphy is a little bit of a stinging blow, Jeff, if you don't mind me being very candid for a moment. What do you make of that?
Well, we've kind of been kicking the tires on that one for a few weeks, Brandon. If you follow Before the Hedges, the signs to me basically pointed to that after the Atlanta opening, when he was talking about he was deeply invested in the academic architecture of both Auburn and Clemson, and yet he hadn't really checked out the academic fit yet at Georgia, and yet his mother was an alum, and he said he'd have to get back to Georgia to do that on his next visit. Well, to me, that's just a clear indication of the real stakeholders in Murphy's decision. I think you use the term toe tag a lot on the hedge, on our Hedges program, which airs Wednesdays on Facebook and YouTube. And he's been drifting off of our top targets list for a while. And, you know, with Murphy, this is just another example. I think we basically populated what Georgia's biggest recruiting areas or biggest recruiting zones are we're going to be for the 2020 cycle. It was the DMV fishing hole. And it was the kind of Cobb County fishing hole a little bit right there. And right now, Dabo Sweeney's got his, I guess, custom-made rod with national championship bling on it. He's reeling in something, a pretty special prospect, another special prospect from Cobb County in Miles Murphy. That's what it seems like to me. And should Clemson keep building? Everybody's seen DJ Ungele, and they've seen DeMarcus Bowman, they've seen Brian Brzee. I think when it's all said and done, Brandon, I think Clemson might end up with 10 of the nation's top 50 players for the 2020 class.
Which is good for them, I guess. And you're right when it comes to Murphy that it's not a surprise that he's not going to choose Georgia. It's not a surprise that he's going to choose Clemson. But I don't know. Maybe I'm making too much out of the symbolic nature of this. But to not even have your hat on the table, to me, feels like a little bit of a, I don't know. It feels like a pretty big disappointment, Jeff.
Well, we've talked about position fits. We've talked about 4-3 versus 3-4. We bring up a lot of reasons or triage here on this one, Brandon, how Georgia currently has about five outside linebackers that look like that Roger Goodell will eventually call their name really early in a draft. The other thing to think about here, Brandon, is Georgia has had its ace recruiter, Dell McGee, on Miles Murphy in its recruitment for quite some time, as well as its outside linebacker coach and Dan Lanning and other guys. Georgia has put the A1A personnel on it, and sometimes, Brandon, the heart wants what the heart wants, and Miles Murphy is going to be a very good one for the Tigers, whether it is going to be purple and orange or navy and orange at Auburn.
Last thing for me on this subject, and I'll admit this is sour grapes, but I'm here for all the 4-3 versus 3-4 talk. I'm fine with that. We veer into the conversation about academics, Auburn especially. If you're going to tell me Auburn academics, that's like saying you're looking forward to going to Norman, Oklahoma in 2023 for all of its five-star restaurants. That's at least my take on that.
Yeah, but I think one point that I think our readers and viewers and listeners need to pay attention to is Georgia's academics are what they are, and they're rated really highly, top 20 school, top 15 school. I think it's 13th in the latest U.S. News and World Report rankings. But that new engineering school is a relative, you know, newborn in terms of all those rankings. It's growing, it's expanding, it's bringing in a couple of elite recruits that did so in the 2019 class. But right now, that engineering school rating also needs to get a little bit higher to impress a lot of those recruits. Now, not saying Auburn and Clemson's are top 10 and top 15 or anything like that, but that's another area where the growing engineering school can really help Georgia in the future.
Let me talk about another one of these kind of strong side defensive end, athletic type guys, and this may be a false positive. Honestly, it probably is, but I'm sure you saw where Javon Dexter, the Florida commit, recently tweeted a picture of himself wearing a Georgia uniform on a recent Georgia visit. And yesterday, Jeff, I brought this up mostly to kind of have fun at the expense of Florida fans, just because I love watching the way they are just absolutely beside themselves in worry after DeMarcus Bowman leaves the state to go to Clemson, and kind of some of the other fears that have been recently struck in the hearts of Florida fans about the state of Dan Mullen's recruiting process. But on the Georgia side of this for a moment, if a Dog fan's looking for some of those athletic defensive lineman type guys, Dexter certainly has the look of one of those, but how serious should a UGA fan take the possibility that Dexter would land somewhere else other than the University of Florida?
Well, Brandon, let's put it like this. I would say the chances of Dexter continue to grow, but you want to talk about busting sour grapes or maybe rattling the cage of Florida fans, which I guess you do enjoy doing. I think Bowman was a dagger to Florida recruiting, but should Georgia pull Gervon Dexter away from Florida, that would be kind of like Georgia losing two Miles Murphys to Clemson. That is a guy that probably should never leave Florida. He's confessed on Twitter. He's been a Florida guy for forever. That he wants that to be his school. If we want to kind of parallel it even further, it would kind of be like an 11th-hour flip of Richard LeCount maybe in the 2017 class from Georgia. Those sort of things don't happen at Georgia, but those sort of things seem like they are still susceptible to happening in Florida.
Yeah, he's exactly right. And I wish that I didn't enjoy this kind of, I think the fancy word is schadenfreude. I wish I didn't enjoy that quite as much, but when Dexter tweeted what he tweeted, I loved looking at all the responses from Florida fans. And listen, I don't condone anybody tweeting anything at a recruit. I think it's best just to leave all that stuff alone, period. But you knew Florida fans were going to be in there with their heart palpitations and everything else, and you definitely saw that. And as we've said before, it's one of the reasons why I think that Dan Mullen is, at this point in time, an overrated coach, because it does seem questionable whether he can hold on to a prospect like Dexter. Could not throw the kitchen sink at a guy like Bowman, the running back, who's now on his way to Clemson. These are things that Dan Mullen at Florida right now are just not very good at doing, and it's one of the reasons why Georgia needs to take advantage of this opportunity while Florida is not raking in the talent the way we become used to the Gators doing that for years and years and years. Let me do one more thing, Jeff, before we let you go. A linebacker, a position that, as you said before, Georgia is in the business of doing really well with. Well, Trenton Simpson comes out with his list of finalists. UGA gets included in that conversation. If I remember correctly from the picture, didn't Georgia get the full helmet on this, the jerseys? We've seen this edit before where it's like a portion of the various uniforms kind of partitioned off, but Georgia got the helmet for Simpson. I don't know if that means anything or not, but we talked about Simpson briefly this past week on Before the Edges. So I guess kind of the latest on that and how big of a deal it is to see UGA included among the list of finalists.
Yeah, the geography of that edit was very interesting. I noted on our forum, Brandon, that I think Miami had basically his belly button part of the jersey and Auburn had the pants. Tennessee had a sleeve and North Carolina had a sleeve and Georgia had the helmet and headgear, the full headgear.
Yeah.
I tell you, Trenton Simpson.
Miami,
man,
being close to the midsection seems about right.
You use the big words today, man. Like they belong out of a shot. They belong out of a Quentin Tarantino script. And now you go with a little saber rattling to Miami. But the thing there with Simpson is I spoke to him maybe, I don't know, 45 days ago, and he felt that Georgia was in there, but they were outside the orbit of the core schools. And yet, man, over the last two or three weeks, Georgia has shot up into his leaderboard. He had a great visit to G-Day. He really likes how Georgia's viewed him as an inside linebacker. And for Georgia and this class, folks need to know that they've obviously checked a lot of boxes with guys like Channing Tindall, N'Kobe Dean, Quay Walker, Monty Rice. They got Tay Crowder in the fold as well for this season. Georgia has stacked up a load of inside backers, not to mention Rian Davis and Trezman Marshall. I only think they take two in this class. And it's going to be interesting which two that is. Is it a guy like Justin Flo who has all the rankings, but maybe – And maybe it's not the athlete that a Trenton Simpson is or a Lenith Whitehead is as well. That's going to be very interesting about how many linebackers, especially inside linebackers, Georgia will take in the 2020 class. Simpson right now, folks, is right there in the midst of it, among the top choices for Georgia.
Good stuff from Jeff Sintel. We always get his twist on UGA recruiting here on the Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. But when you want chef-inspired food with a twist, you want to check out Marlowe's Tavern. Become a Marlowe's Insider by texting the word Marlowe's, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, 24242. You can find out about a lot of really fun things, including special menu items and all kinds of stuff happening in the tavern right there in your neighborhood. What a great time. It's patio season right now. There's so many great Marlowe's Taverns patios that we enjoy kind of hanging out and having a little craft cocktail or some really good food. It's just a springtime is a great time to get over to the Marlowe's Tavern closest to you. So find out more about that. Jeff, thanks for sharing a little recruiting insight with us. We appreciate you being a part of the program, and I will see you right here in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios tomorrow afternoon for Before the Hedges, and we'll talk even more about this 2020 class as it continues to come together.
All right, guys. Have yourself a good week. See everybody tomorrow.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, really fun to have Jeff Sintel on the program. Like getting that recruiting insight from him. And as I said yesterday, for the people who are just joining us, I know many of you radio-wise or video-wise, you start the show a little later. Don't forget, today is the big day that if you go to DogNation.com, the links there for our Dog Nation Days of Summer, the big event starting June 13th, at Callaway Resort and Gardens, and then on August 1st at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. You can get in and register for your rooms right now, and the reason why you want to act right now on that is the first 20 to do so. First 20 rooms booked at either location qualifies you for a special VIP experience. That's an hour earlier than the regular event that starts at 6. We'll have a VIP experience starting at 5 and a whole lot of fun and add-ons to go with that. Dog Nation Days of Summer are going to be a blast. It's not just for us to celebrate. It's for you to celebrate with us. We'll escape from Atlanta, enjoy a little summer getaway, some great weather, some great times, whole lot of fun. Cannot wait to see you for Dog Nation Days of Summer. Before we do our SEC through, let me also remind you very quickly that our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia, that is a group you want to have on your mind this time of year, because when you're taking stock of your house, a lot of you do spring cleaning this time of year, you may notice a crack in your foundation or some sort of like wet spot, something like that. And my advice to you is act fast, get that fixed and taken care of, and trust experts. Jeff was talking about engineers a moment ago. Well, Engineered Solutions of Georgia has a full-time engineer on staff. You want smart people, experts, doing this kind of work to your house, so give them a call at 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. All right, kind of an interesting story to start our SEC through off with today. Mike Lombardi is a former NFL executive of some note. I don't exactly know what his job when he worked in the league was, but he's been kind of a media guy now for a while. Now, Lombardi actually worked for the Browns not too long ago, so he was, I know he was with them for a while, but he's been kind of more of a media figure probably for the last 7 or 8 years. A lot of podcasts, a lot of things like that. Lombardi is a pretty outspoken guy when it comes to the NFL. Recently wrote a book, I want to say. So he's been kind of a guy that's been out there a lot. And he was on a podcast not too long ago talking about how difficult it was to evaluate Jared Stidham as a quarterback at the NFL level because of how bad Gus Malzahn's offense is at Auburn. Now, listen, that's, you talk about enjoying it, having a good time with that. Georgia fans love the idea of hearing somebody criticizing the Gus Malzahn offense and saying it's not very good for evaluating quarterbacks. Now, Tommy Tuberville, the ex-Auburn coach, was on a sports radio station in Alabama this week kind of pushing back on that, saying, hey, there's a lot you don't understand about that. Malzahn's had trouble holding on to his quarterback's coach, and kind of on and on it goes, which I would suggest to Coach Tuberville, who's obviously trying to play the role of good statesman. He's running for Senate, I guess, in Alabama, or governor or something like that. So he's got to try to keep in good grace with the Auburn fans. He wants to be the gracious ex-coach defending Malzahn. The reason why Malzahn has had trouble holding on to quarterbacks coaches is because they've chosen to leave under their own volition, because they're essentially privates in Malzahn's army. Malzahn is the guy that wants full control of that offense. Therefore, Rhett Lashley didn't want to stick around. He and Chip Lindsey did not seem to get along very much either. But now, let's find out. Is Malzahn, in this year coming up in 2019, which is so crucial for the future of his coaching career at Auburn, is he the kind of guy that can develop a quarterback? Is he the kind of guy that can build an offense? He's calling the plays again, and he's going to get a chance to pick which quarterback he wants. The athlete from a couple classes ago, Joey Gatewood, the fresh face, incoming freshman, Bo Nix. Take this young man, develop him, and cultivate him into something, or I think Auburn fans are going to say, move on, take your buyout, all this money that we've chosen to give you, and move on. I honestly can't tell you if the Auburn offense is good at developing quarterbacks or not. Other than Cam Newton, I think you're struggling to find a quarterback that it has developed. And obviously a lot of Auburn fans are seemingly frustrated that Malzahn wants to inject himself so much into that offense. That's one of the crucial storylines to watch for Auburn this season. Another SEC story I wanted to mention, this also involves quarterbacks. Barton Simmons, who you may know as a recruiting figure, he works for 24/7 Sports. He wrote a piece at CBSSports.com this week that I thought was really interesting. He was talking about quarterback succession plans. And he was mentioning the programs that kind of have the best setup for that right now. And he mentioned the situation in Oklahoma, for instance, and some others. But he also mentioned the South Carolina situation as well, because as it stands right now, they've got Jake Bentley, who's the presumed starter for this season, with Ryan Helinski waiting the wings after him on that, and then a 2020 commit on board as well. And certainly there is a positive way of looking at this for South Carolina, saying for a program who's, and that's really been Muschamp's only problem since becoming a head coach, is developing that quarterback. Never had that at Florida. It's the reason why he got fired. Well, maybe now he's got a full plan for quarterbacks in place. But I wonder how true that really is. Maybe I'm just being too negative, but I'm not even so sure that Jake Bentley is going to be able to hold on to that job for the entirety of the season. At one point in time, there was some talk about Dacreon Joyner. Maybe now all the talk is about Helinski. But let's say that Helinski eventually beats out Bentley for that job in what's supposed to be Bentley's big year. At that point in time, is any 2020 quarterback going to want to follow and come to South Carolina knowing that Helinski's got a grip on this job for the next 2 years? That's essentially the situation that all college programs are dealing with right now, Georgia to a certain extent included. And I'm not so sure South Carolina is going to be any different. It may be that over the course of this year, it's not about the quarterback succession plan, but about the fact that the future is now for the Gamecocks at quarterback. It may be Helinski more so than Bentley, and that may happen sooner rather than later. One more quick quarterback point I want to make. I mentioned the SI mock draft, Eric Single, the writer. It included J.J. Holloman as a potential first-round pick a moment ago, and I think that's kind of interesting. Something else about this draft that I also thought was interesting. This is the first one that I have seen that did not have Tua Tagovailoa. I want to say maybe number one overall. Single, writing for Sports Illustrated, only had Tua going number 9 overall. Actually, Jake Fromm in this draft going ahead of him. Now, this is one person's opinion, but I'm curious to see over the course of time how much this grows. All of these guys will be poked and prodded and kind of picked on and picked at as we head towards next spring. But Single was really the first guy on a major national level, writing for Sports Illustrated, kind of qualifies in that regard, to point out the fact that Tagovailoa has not played as well against top-flight defenses. Against Mississippi State last year and LSU last year, against Georgia last year, those games in which Tua was playing against the best defenses that he's seen, the stats for Tua went way down. Now, the optimistic appraisal, if you're an Alabama fan of that, is, yeah, but he was also dealing with an injury at that point in time, and maybe that's the reason why the stats weren't as good as they were. Maybe that's the case. But I think moving into this season, I do think that Tua's got more to prove against the best defenses that he plays against, and I think that's one of the things that's going to make Tua versus Fromm and all the other top quarterbacks in college football, SEC included, kind of fun to watch. Quick final thing, LaMichael Petway, the guy for Arkansas last year, receiver that actually put up some pretty good numbers, transferred out of the program. He announced that he's now on his way to Iowa State. This one to me just seems weird. I don't know much about this situation. I don't know why Petway wanted to leave as a grad transfer, but it seems like Arkansas as a program, at least down the lower tier of the SEC, is somewhat on the rise. I think that Chad Morris had a pretty good recruiting class, and I think there's maybe a little more optimism this year. Morris is obviously an offensive-minded coach, but apparently Petway thinks that Ames, Iowa, is the best place to finish his playing career, so he is on his way out of Fayetteville. He'll head to Iowa State. That's one of the rare times that Iowa State gets mentioned on Dog Nation Daily. We'll make that your SEC through. Let me also, before I congratulate the Georgia basketball team on a great recruiting win, remind you about Merriweather and Tharp. You know, listen, divorce is one of those things that people don't like to talk about, and it's one of those things you hope never happens to you. In fact, most people assume it never will happen to you. But if it does, you know you're going to be left with a lot of questions. And when you have big questions about an important topic, it's important to get expert advice about those questions. That's why you want to trust my friends at Merriweather and Tharp. In fact, go find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. The website, once again, theatlantadivorceteam.com. Those questions, that uncertainty, you will get that satisfied by having a consultation with them. So please go to theatlantadivorceteam.com. You can find out more about that. All right, really quickly, how about Georgia basketball? basketball, adding another top 100 recruit to its most recent signing class, Xavier Wheeler, a point guard. Speaking of Iowa State, I guess Wheeler also chose Georgia over the Cyclones. This is the second point guard Georgia's added recently as well. Also added the transfer from Northeastern recently as well. When you think about, you know, kind of a pass-first point guard kind of going along with what Georgia's going to have with Anthony Edwards. I know Chip Towers got a piece up at DogNation.com about the future of Nick Claxton and all this as well. Imagine what could happen for Georgia if Claxton says, hey, they're building something pretty good at Georgia. Maybe I want to be a part of that. It is pretty clear that Tom Crean came to Georgia with a vision for what this program could be, and he's really executing that right now. I think this is an exciting time to be a Georgia basketball fan. I don't know how good they're going to be this year. I'm not quite sure how much of a difference a collection of freshmen can make, even a group as impressive as this. But there's no doubt the arrow is pointed up for Georgia basketball right now. And there's no doubt that Crean, to this point, is really doing Georgia what he promised he would do. Remember before Crean kind of officially landed on the job here, back on the PMT, pardon my take, podcast, Crean was a friend of those guys, and he really at that time expressed a real energy about getting back to coaching and handpicking the place he wanted to come. And what Crean said then, it seems really prophetic based on what's happening now. Here's Crean before he took the UGA job.
I want to coach, but I want to coach. I want to go to a championship capacity type program. You know, we built one up at Marquette. The build up here was incredible, you know, in the sense of what it had to become. And the one thing, I think I've shown myself some grit myself, because the one thing with what happened to us, with having the job taken from us like that, I mean, I've never let it get in and take my nerve or create doubt that can't do this at the highest level. And I want to do that again.
Yeah, so I think that's great stuff from Tom Crean, saying that he had the energy to coach, wanted to be a part of, you know, a program that he thought to win. And for a lot of Georgia fans, you know, I don't know that there was a great belief that Georgia could win and win with recruits, win on the court the way that Crean seemingly believes that they can and believed that they could before he took the job. And yet he's making that dream right now seem like a reality. And there's still obviously a need to go out and win with the recruits that you're bringing in. I won't deny that's true, that the next step is obviously the hardest, but you can't get to that next step without winning with these recruits right now. It is really, really something to see Georgia, long an afterthought for any major player, all of a sudden seemingly in the mix with a lot for this class, including obviously the centerpiece of it all, Anthony Edwards, which when he leaves to go to the NBA draft could be one of the top two, top three players taken. This is a big-time player, but you got to have big-time talent around those players, and Crean's doing that. By the way, on this program, we love being a Gator hater and our Gator hater updater. It's now been 920 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. That's good news. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.